This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Friday to us all. The first Friday of 2025. Thank you for sharing it with us. You can join us 855-752-4842. Jess PS on the board and jazzed as hell to reintroduce our favorite Friday guest host today, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a law review broadcasting right here on the Civic Media Radio Network on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. Happy Friday, Jim. Happy New Year, man.
Once again, Happy New Year. Happy Friday. Good to be with you. And just once again, things happening
yes.
in the state of the world, are they not?
Can
in
you, our nation. Can you believe it? Can
oh,
you
my
believe
goodness.
It.
Goodness, right?
A lot to get to today. Certainly the breaking news, Speaker Johnson reelected. After a couple of the holdouts, they kept the vote open. There were three that voted against him or for somebody else. But
we have to go out in the hallway. We have to talk to people, right? This is like being back in grade school.
It was.
Right?
You know, it's
right?
funny you said that. I kind of remember being sent right. out to the hallway.
You and me both. You and me both. Jim, let's talk outside for a few moments. Then we'll get this all straightened out. In fact, apparently it works in the United States Congress, too.
And, yeah, it worked on two of them. Massey, the holdout. That was a guy who said he would have to pull his fingernails out for right. him to vote right. for Johnson. So Johnson reelected, and I thought it was two votes, but no. The three voted against him, then they held the vote open.
Right, right.
So they could be cajoled to vote for Johnson, and then he ultimately won it on the, I guess, technically first vote.
Even that. Well, he apparently, some discretion in the incoming speaker just to hold things open while he gets the necessary votes. In other trappings of our lives, there are rules about that, right? And we vote, and then it comes to a conclusion, but apparently not in the United States Congress. The good news, I suppose, is that we do have a government now that, at least in that branch of government, can operate, and people can be appointed to committees, and, oh, yeah, we can do this little thing next week called counting electoral votes, which, again, a week ago, you and I were bemoaning the fact that maybe we wouldn't be able to do that if we didn't have a government, so that's good news. That's good news, I
mean,
suppose.
You know, We should go to D.C. It will be wild, I heard.
Right, right, exactly. We've got some envelopes to open next week, and presumably, well, we don't know if that will go well, but we've got the 6th of January coming up here, and we'll see what happens then. Presumably, both the present president of the Senate, her name is Vice President Kamala Harris, and the newly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, opening those votes and counting them and declaring the President of the United States of America as Donald Trump. He doesn't get sworn in until the 20th, of course, but we've got a few days to work on
and before
things.
He gets sworn in, he will be
sentenced.
Okay, hold on that. Hold on that. Let's stick to the headlines right now with regards to Johnson. We have a little bit of sound of the day. Just PS doing the hard work. Thank you for that. Matt Gaetz not going to serve in the 119th Congress. Apparently, the House pretty happy about that. Jess, let's play cut number one.
The clerk is in receipt of a letter from the Honorable Matt Gaetz
Honorable?
Of the state of Florida, indicating that he will not serve in the House in the 119th Congress.
Yeah.
Without objection, the letters relating to his resignation will be printed in the record.
No objections here.
And thank goodness this is part of the record so that when we write our PhD stories on all this down the road, we've got clarity on the fact that Matt Gaetz, not a part of government going forward, probably should have been prosecuted in the state system, a federal system, but he gets on with his life outside of the Congress.
And, you know, at least we did get the House ethics report.
Yes,
it was a fight
yes.
over whether or not we would ever see that. And it has come to light, and you can definitely see why Gaetz and, you know, the people who wanted him to serve as attorney general did not want that coming to light.
And the notion, once again, that this man came within some votes of becoming the chief federal law enforcement officer of the United States of America in 2025. Our incoming president wanted him to serve in that capacity and was advocating for that for a long period of time.
Does it make you question the judgment of the incoming president, Jim?
Although that's not, that is not the particular event that prompts me questioning, but it's one of them. We'll put that on the list.
We got a couple from the highlights today. Once again, Speaker Johnson reelected. And I was on earlier today, Matt and I are on air with Jane and Greg and Kelvin on the board. And we were talking about this, obviously, before the vote came down. And one of my observations was, I wonder how this will reflect on Trump. He was out there last week pushing it. He sent another tweet out and message out this morning telling people, hey, Mike's the guy, Mike's the guy.
He's my guy.
And I got to say, I think, it worked. The GOP coalesced at least this time. And maybe it was a shot across the bow with these first two, not going along with it, didn't have the votes initially, and then they kept the vote open, and they eventually, flipped over. Massey did not. But I guess I would consider this a victory for Donald Trump and his effort to keep the MAGAs together.
A victory with a very small V. This is what counts for a victory now, Dom, right. In 2025. That if the normal thing that happens that should happen when you've got a majority party in the House of Representatives, in the Senate side, apparently things under Kamala Harris' direction went routinely today as she swore people in. But this now counts for a victory when the Republican Party, they're now in power, can get it together sufficiently to elect a Speaker of the House of Representatives. Oh, happy day.
Oh, happy day.
Good that happens.
The
once
lights
again,
are on.
Right?
Congratulations.
Exactly, right? The really terrible thing did not happen. Let's celebrate that. And that's the level of victory that Donald Trump should be celebrating.
The bar has certainly been lowered,
it,
Jim.
It is quite low.
The narrowest margin for a House in almost 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Since 1930, man.
Right, right. And we know going forward, too, that we're not out of the woods completely, right? Because as we talked last week, and you know well, as does Jess, we've got other people who are leaving the Congress to take positions inside this new administration. Mm-hmm. That's going to change things. We're going to have variables in the numbers here to get legislation passed, to do other things. And so Mike Johnson has no small task in front of him. The one good thing is that this prior rule that sunk the previous speaker has now been expanded to 9 members of the House of Representatives have to come forward and say we no longer have confidence. It used to be just one could stand up, right?
And they all have to be of the
Republican
majority party.
Yes, right.
Come on,
right,
man.
Right.
My understanding, though, Jim, that was normally historically the case.
Exactly, right.
That was one from either party could step up and do that and push that.
Exactly. Again, we didn't have to think about these things when we had some sense of commitment to a party. But now we've got Mike Johnson's got a little bit more space, but he's also taking out of today's event the fact that, again, we suspend the vote. We do have to go talk to at least 2 more people. There were others among that group beyond who voted for him in that first vote who plainly had expressed concern. There were about 7, 8, 9 of them altogether who, even going into that this afternoon, and said, well, I'm not quite certain, some deciding as late as today. He's got some issues down the road. And again, this razor-thin majority that he has does not guarantee him the capacity to do everything that he and, yes, Donald Trump want to do. Among other things, you've got that debt ceiling thing out there. Mm-hmm. You've got Janet Yellen, who's the Treasury Secretary, writing to him saying, you know what, you got to take care of this, because if not, we've got some real crisis. She says she can do a few things administratively to, again, keep the lights on. But he's got
not like do a little check cutting on the government level,
right? But he's got some other challenges out there, and he plainly has a party. Again, if he had even 10, 15, 20 members of a balance there, he doesn't. And it'll be interesting to see. The other challenge out there, of course, is for the Democrats too. At what point do they want to not rescue him, but assist in getting government moving to keep the debt ceiling perhaps where it should be, to keep government afloat? We've got to address that issue again in early 25. At what point do the Democrats say, okay, will lean over and will support
the
speaker.
Depends what the deal is, man.
Exactly,
you know what
right?
I mean?
Right?
They're going to need the Dems on the debt ceiling. There's no question about it, because some of those Republicans are not going to. Massey's certainly not going to. Chip Roy, some others have expressed some concern about that as well. So we assume they're going to lose some of those. Well, they lose 3, 4, or 5 people. Next thing you know, you don't have the votes. You can't get it done. So that means you got to reach out to Hakeem Jeffries and that
exactly.
crew. And then, okay, that's great. We all want to do this, but what are you going to give us?
Exactly. And what consideration can we have substantively? It's not just a matter of playing games on Capitol Hill. What things can we anticipate that you will at least get out of committee, for example, and put these things to a vote? Obviously, Republicans have the capacity, as they do now in the Senate, to keep things from even coming to the floor of the House or the Senate. Maybe those are the kinds of things that Hakeem Jeffries and his leadership group should say, we need votes on these.
You know,
we
leverage want that.
Exactly. Yeah. Precisely. And let's tell the American people what it is that the full House of Representatives feels about these very important issues. Again, their education, their the environment, their commerce, their agriculture, all those kinds of things.
Oh, a bunch of woke topics. Come on, we don't need any of that DEI, Joe. We got a little bit more sound. Mike Johnson, victorious today. Cut number 2, please.
We best serve our own country and most successfully discharge our obligations to humanity by continuing to be openly and candidly, intensely and scrupulously American. I love that. I love that. Today, yeah, that's right. That's an applause line.
We're all Americans.
Please clap. What is that? Pause for applause. I'm surprised you didn't read that on the prompter.
I want to say, I turned up the volume on that sound that he heard from the audience. That wasn't a clap. It was a cough.
coughing to the notion that, yes, again, here's the low bar. The low bar, coughing in support, presumably, of the fact that what? We're all Americans. Gosh, when I woke up this morning, I wasn't quite certain of that,
you know,
but
we needed to have the speaker affirm that for us. We have just a little bit more time in this segment. Let's sneak in the first cut from Hakeem Jeffries. Love this one. Cut number 3, please, Jess.
2 months ago, the American people elected Donald Trump as the 47th president of the United States of America. Thank you for that very generous applause. It's okay. There are no election deniers on our side of the aisle.
Talking to you, Cam. 855-752-4842. Hakeem Jeffries getting in a little dig. And it's duly noted. You know, the statistics I've seen from the reporting of the percentage of Republicans who think this was a great and fair election. It's amazing when your guy wins how great you think the election was. And although not to the same degree, Democrats feeling a little down
absolutely
compared to the last election.
Let's count the number of times the Democratic Party and Democrats have run into courts, federal and state, and asked to be considered for a review of this past election.
It's just easy to find me 11,789 votes,
exactly.
Jim. You know,
right.
One more than we need. That's okay, right? That's okay.
We're just not doing that. The Democrats
we're not
are not doing,
it doing
that.
Right.
Exactly.
Or are we?
Again, when your guy loses, we go that route. When he or they win, everything is legitimate.
We are all winners when James Santel joins us. You can join us today as well. Happy Friday, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. At Just PS on the board, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a Law Review, joining me at the table today. And you can do so on the lines or on the text. It's the same number. Be patient. We will get to you a little more from the breaking news today. Speaker Johnson remains Speaker Johnson. A little bit of drama. 3 Republicans pushed back. 2 of them were eventually cajoled after a pause in the vote. And they came around to vote for Speaker Johnson. A victory for him, certainly for Trump. and the mega agenda. we're talking, we've got some of the sound, Hakeem Jeffries. No election deniers on our side of the aisle. And Cam, I see you. Quote, it's literally not election denying, it's factual information. The numbers are not possible. It's like screaming fire and you're in a school for the gifted deaf. Come on, Cam. Besides, if there were to be something along those lines, I would expect it be coming from other people besides you, Cam. You know, like the Democratic Party or those who actually would have standing or concerns about the fact that some folks think this election was stolen by Trump this time. But I digress. Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House, speaking today as well. We talked about the no election deniers, bipartisanship. Let's hear about that. You know, Steve Bannon wants hyper-partisanship. we'll see what happens. Here's Hakeem. Cut number four, please, Jess.
House Democrats will work hard to find bipartisan common ground with our Republican colleagues and the incoming administration on any issue, whenever and wherever possible, in order to make life better for everyday Americans.
And I appreciate that. You know, there are going to be, and there'll be pushback on things that the Democrats do as well. Hey, why are you teaming up with those megas? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that?
Right.
Because ultimately, we need governance. We need to continue to move government. We cannot have stagnation in our government. And if there are opportunities, certainly as a leader and the Dems as a body should work when they can with the Republicans.
It's that C word, right? It's called compromise. And it's not a nasty word. It's not a negative word. It's how legislation gets done. Remember when Obamacare was passed? The president was holding out for Republicans to join in and masse. They said they sort of would. They didn't. He was trying to compromise. In the end, kind of took away portions of his own legislation, anticipating that happening.
And they didn't.
But nonetheless, that's the way government works. You don't always get everything you want to going in. I often say in the context of legal settlements and courtroom things, if everybody leaves the room and you're a little bit unhappy, you didn't get everything you want, you probably have a good settlement. And you've got a good, strong basis for going ahead and implementing whatever it is you just negotiated. If everybody leaves a little bit unhappy, you're okay.
Then you're okay. That's kind of a bummer way to do it, but okay.
Yeah.
But it is. That's what compromise is. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Finally, Hakeem Jeffries, cut number five, please, Jess.
We will fight hard to make sure that no one in this town takes away Social Security or Medicare from the American people. Not now, not ever. No means never.
Right.
And there you've got the minority leader there saying there are things, there are red lines, right? Compromise, you can do a lot of things in that area, but there are some things we cannot countenance. And Speaker Johnson and members of the slightly majority party right now know that there are some things that the American people are going to insist on not compromising on. Those are a couple of them.
And we did hear today as well, I believe it was Speaker Johnson talking about, you know, moving quickly to extend the Trump tax cuts.
Yes.
Well, and we've heard some rumblings before of, you know, the Doge and other folks say, well, we got to, you know, cut spending by, what, $2.5 trillion. Well, where's that coming from? You know what I'm saying? So we'll see how this all pans out. It's kind of, I don't know, it's a nice contradictory statement. Hey, we'll be bipartisan and supportive when we can, but you're not touching Social Security or Medicare.
It's clear. Again, one of the things that we will anticipate seeing, it's all about money, right? It's all about dollars and it's math. You simply can't do all of this. And again, you've got to, in the end, keep the government operational at some levels, because government does do an awful lot of good things out there for people and supports an awful lot of Americans. But you've got to do it based upon the numbers. And if they're not there, you just can't keep going forward in the way that you might otherwise want to do.
Well, the numbers and the votes. 855-752-4842. CJ, happy Friday, CJ. Happy New Year. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Well, thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. We do have to do something about our fiscal responsibility, because if we don't do something to modify Social Security or the standards, what it takes to get, it's going to be in the red in no time. And it'll be mandatory that benefits will either be cut or people won't receive it. So the mere fact that posturing, you can't do anything about it. It's like Obamacare. They won't let insurance companies compete across state lines. That was one thing Republicans asked for. Competition is good. Most small businesses and a lot of individuals file taxes as class corporations. I'm sure Civic Radio does the same thing. They need those tax cuts to expand their businesses.
Come on, man. And listen, hang on. Number one, I get what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. But you know, let's talk about there's two sides of the equation, right? There's the revenue side and there's the expense side. Right now, when you earn your income and you're taxed on your Social Security, there's a cap on that. One of the ways we could help fund Social Security and meet the obligations, raise that cap, lift that cap. Why should there be a cap whatsoever? Why should Elon Musk be able to pay his entirety of his Social Security amount in like 14 seconds of 2025?
It was 60 seconds.
Okay, sorry. you know what I'm saying? Why cap that, man? Well, I mean, shouldn't they be contributing as well? CJ's out. We don't know CJ. Hang on. Oh, go ahead, CJ.
Third solution. But saying you're not going to do anything, someone's going to have to pay more. Or
yeah, that's exactly
right. Yes. Precisely right.
Thank you,
right.
Thank you, CJ.
Exactly, and to sacrifice those interests on the altar of huge tax breaks of the sort that we saw late in 2017, and premising future tax breaks upon the notion that we've got to cut those entitlement programs that are out there that have been around again for many, many years. That's the problem. That's the problem right there. You're balancing one against the other, and you're basically siding in favor of the oligarchs and the people who can pay against the people who are getting these benefits.
They may have the money, but they only got one vote. There's a lot more of us. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. Was Merrick Garland the worst AG in history? We'll ask James Santel.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, the first Friday of 2025. Thank you for spending it with us. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus A Law Review, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Saturdays, that's tomorrow, 9 to 11 a.m. Just PS on the board. You can be part as well, 855-75-CIVIC. We're going to get to Trump, but before we get into the weeds on the sentencing that's supposed to occur from Judge Mershon, let's step back a minute, Jim, if we may, and look, you know, maybe from 30,000 feet. I was reflecting on this yesterday as we're thinking about what we're going to talk about today. I'm like, man, this Merrick Garland is terrible. He was terrible, man. He sat on his hands for years. What? It's hard to imagine a worse attorney general. And I'm looking at, like, Bill Barr, man. He got out in front of the Mueller report, man. He covered up for, like, Reagan or Bush.
Statements that are plainly wrong about what the Mueller report showed.
The lack of action, is that worse than going out and specifically lying about what these investigations have found? I'm not sure that that's much different, man.
Right.
There was
that old Edmund Burke's statement, right? That all you know for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. And so, speaking again about the Mueller report, you've got Bill Barr, yes, misrepresenting wildly what it said and what did not say. Remember that all of those obstruction of justice incidents that Bob Mueller identified in that report. We talked about this on the air years ago, ad nauseum, perhaps.
Obstruction of justice.
In connection with the very investigation of Russia, right?
Right,
of 2016.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So he finds
Trump's
actions in themselves.
In that investigation.
Absolutely.
Were obstructing justice.
Firing Jim Comey, telling his counsel not to report on certain things, telling them to remake documents, those kinds of things. Don McGahn, remember that name, his counsel? All kinds of things. Editing public statements about what he did and did not do. Bob Mueller identifies 10 of those. And again, not all of them would have been the subject of prosecutions. I think at the time we talked, maybe 6, 8, depending upon some discretionary exercises. But all of those happened when? 2016, and most importantly, in 2017, the first months of the first term of Donald Trump in the office. Okay?
So when they were doing the investigation into Trump was gumming up the works.
Absolutely, right? And again, Bob Mueller says in the end, he says, I can't prosecute. Why? Because he's a sitting president, so he hands this to Nancy Pelosi. Again, we celebrated her return to the Congress today, and that's a good thing. But frankly, Nancy Pelosi also made the determination early on that there was nothing about that. The American people, she said, are not ready to impeach a president. So we gave him a pass there. But what did happen to your subject matter here about Merrick Garland? You take 2017. You add 5 years to it.
Why are we adding 5 years?
We're adding 5 years to it because that's a statute of limitations,
right?
For a federal prosecution for obstruction of justice, you could maybe go on broader concepts if you re-describe this. But basically 5 years, okay? So you take 2017, you add 5 years to that, and Jess, who's the good scientist among us and the mathematician, she will tell me that gets you into the spring of 2022. Who is the attorney general in the spring of 2022? Well, that's Merrick Garland. And so although we don't know about it, at some point we know that we will identify that there are memorandums inside the Department of Justice about what we do. Do we basically go ahead and now prosecute someone who is no longer a sitting president? The policy against that no longer applies. What should we do, Mr. Attorney General? And I have no doubt, I don't know, I have not seen any documents. There were discussions about this, memorandums about this, and in the end, sometime in 2022, the statute of limitations lapsed. And that happened on Merrick Garland's watch. And what that means is that Donald Trump not only impeached, not impeached on that, but also for prosecution purposes, those obstruction counts, those obstruction instances, unmistakable, clear, they're footnoted. You could have tried the case out of that report itself.
Just out of the report.
Out of the report. It tells you who says what, who to call, what documents support all that. Merrick Garland decided not to prosecute Donald Trump. And why is that significant? Well, number one, it means that he gets away with obstruction. But I would argue no less important is the D word once again, and that is deterrence, right? When Donald Trump is not impeached, he, number one, understands that, hey, I can run roughshod over the Congress. And then even as a private citizen, ultimately, when he loses in 2020, what he knows is that this Department of Justice is not going to prosecute him either. And that gives you a sense of confidence in going ahead. It gives you the capacity, even while you are the president, plainly to do these other things that do prompt impeachments. You take the documents out of the White House because you think, you know what, nobody's ever going to go after me. All of that, the timing again has to be straightened out. But all of that sending the message that law enforcement, and in particular the Department of Justice, from my perspective, did not do what it should have done at that time to deter this man from engaging in obstruction of justice. Many other defendants out there in America to this day, the subject of criminal indictments for obstruction charges,
right,
a whole less serious and dramatic than this. Donald Trump got away with that on this attorney general's watch.
When investigations are going on and people are actively trying to, you know, keep the information from coming out,
right,
that makes the crime even worse, right? I mean, that's the whole point of the obstruction of justice.
It does. And you can, again, go back to another president. His name is Richard Nixon, right? You can make an argument that Richard Nixon may not have been involved, actually, with the plumbers, if you will, initially. But what does he do? Rather than saying, my gosh, I've just discovered, John Dean just came to me and told me about all these things, the cancer in the presidency. I am flabbergasted by this. I was not involved in this. And hang those people out to dry, right? Instead, what he does is he engages in storming stonewalling. That's where the phrase comes from, right? And John Mitchell gets involved. You obstruct justice. That's the reason why ultimately, again, back in the early 1970s, Richard Nixon was compelled to leave the White House because he engaged in conduct that's violative of the law of the federal criminal code, right?
He was just too weak. Man, he should have fought back. Man, he should have. If he did what Trump continues to do, we would have a different history right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it's this important notion of deterrence. And that's what I find especially troubling.
Well,
with
it's not
this
just a deterrence. It's the multi levels of different justice, mm-hmm. quote unquote. Right. If it was me, sitting around trying to stick it to the man for investigating me, they come down on me like a ton of bricks.
If you went to witnesses and said, you know what, I need a favor from you. I need you to tell the police and law enforcement, other than what's wrong, take this document and I need to have you doctor this and change that. I need to have you tell the American people or even just law enforcement, even people in our community, that something is true when in fact it's not. As a part of an attempt to push back on, and oh, by the way, I'm going to try to fire the very person, and I'm going to be successful in firing the very person who is investigating me, all of that obstruction of justice, Donald Trump got away with that.
So what is it, then I guess the question is, a guy like Bill Barr, who helped cover it up,
right,
versus a guy like Merrick Garland, who didn't go after it when it was plain as day. Is one of those worse than the other? Because the effect, Jim, is exactly the same.
The effect is the same. And again, all these things, this is not in any way to defend a decision not to do it in circumstances where it's so compelling. We've got the report on this. There is prosecutorial discretion. You make that decision all the time when you've got witnesses who maybe are not as strong as they otherwise would be. When the documents are not as clear, where you just don't think you're going to be able to convince a jury. Here in this instance, I don't know that any of that is true. And so one day when these documents inside the Department of Justice are released, when you and I are still getting together with Jess on a Friday afternoon talking about all this, it'd be fascinating to see what those memorandums say about the decision not to go ahead in 2021 and 2022 to prosecute, again, a person who is no longer in the presidency. That policy against not prosecuting a sitting president no longer applies. What is the reason for not going ahead on even 3, 4, 5 of those counts and going after an obstructive behavior?
Yeah, pick the top 2 or 3, I mean, the guarantees, the ones, because you don't need to win all of them.
Right.
Just get the point across.
It would have been a huge trial, right? Because he's engaging in so many different things, you can pick and choose. You can make a discretionary decision. And some of those, Bob Mueller even acknowledges sort of in his testimony, which wasn't great, you may recall, in front of the Congress, that some of them are more compelling than others. But he listed them all. Why? Because he wanted to be clear on what happened here. And we can give prosecutors inside the Department of Justice who are looking at all this a great deal of discretionary authority to pick and choose. But some of those should have been selected. And that's how we began this administration again. And I know we want to talk more about the delay in investigating January 6th. We waited a year. We got the attention finally of internal prosecutors in the Department of Justice who yesterday were getting the Presidential Medal of Freedom by the current president for initiating this, right? Right. And for identifying in the public domain that, hey, this wasn't just 1,200 or thousands of people who were assaulting our Capitol, but maybe in fact it was larger than that. And we were waiting somehow to move up the chain as we do in drug cases. Instead of saying, you know what, Donald Trump was saying those things on the ellipse on January 6th and saying, let's go down there. Let's do this. Take back your government. Doesn't that prompt you to say, you know what, let's at least open a file to determine whether or not there are higher level people who may have been involved in inciting this insurrection, who are responsible for doing that? You open that virtually, I'll give them a week or so, right?
Right, man, what are you talking about? Right? What are you talking about? How in the hell does it take a year, man? We were watching that live.
Right. Right.
I mean, it was obvious what was happening. And a lot of those folks, the foot soldiers or the ones that got caught up in it, you know, they're paying the price, and maybe they'll get their sentence commuted, or they'll get pardons from Trump, as he has promised to do. And that would put a lot of violent people back out on the streets. The Law and Order Party will have that conversation if and when.
Exactly.
But what are you talking about? It's very evident. The Wilbur Hotel, these things are known.
Right. That meeting there at the hotel, blocks from the White House there. And all of these people, again, again, the 1,300 prosecuted and many more out there who may in fact be the subject of pardons, also saying, why was I there? I was there in part because my president called me to come there. I was there because I was hearing all these things on social media. I'm not saying that's a predicate in and of itself to seek an indictment from the grand jury, but it's a predicate for opening the file and doing that investigative work even while the House committee is being constituted and going ahead. He waited a year. And what happens in the end? And it gets to the third big piece of this, of course, is you ran out of time. Right? You prosecuted, and Donald Trump's attorneys did a terrific job in the end of delaying this dramatically.
Well, we certainly understand the strategy from Donald Trump and his attorneys.
Absolutely,
delay. Right? We get all that. And, you know, and obstruct if you can, because they're not going to come after you. Who gives a damn, right?
Get the Supreme Court to say some things it hasn't said in 238 years about the capacity of a president to commit crimes. That's a pretty big push
in the direction.
Right?
And
right?
Even that, to some degree, that decision from the Supreme Court may not have gotten there had he jumped on this thing earlier.
Absolutely. Right. And you make those arguments. You had two great opinions from Tanya Chutkan from the Court of Appeals, again, that should have happened a year before they happened here. And again, not to say that they would not have gone to the Supreme Court, but a different time and a different place. Yeah. We're not yet on the verge of a new campaign here. We didn't know what Donald Trump was going to do yet. Maybe there would have been some dynamics there in the Supreme Court that would have tempered a little bit of that decision. And in the end, again, as we have spoken about, and this is my other soapbox piece of this, the attorney general, I believe it was the attorney general and not Jack Smith, who said, you know what, let's anticipate what Donald Trump will do, which is also in violation of fundamental norms about justice. Let's dismiss these cases. Let's do it on our watch. On our watch, when we believe in the legitimacy of these cases, the Mar-a-Lago case, we believe in the legitimacy of that insurrection case, because a grand jury said so, but the evidence suggests that dramatically. Jack Smith put together this huge report to Tanya Chutkan saying, this is what I will try. And then after the election, we said, okay, let's dismiss this now. No. Let Donald Trump be the one who defines himself by dismissing this on his term. Don't you do it, Merrick Garland.
But he did it. His lack of priority, his lack of urgency is just as detrimental to this case as Trump's ability and his attorney's ability to delay. It's the same thing on the other side.
Absolutely.
Man.
If you don't act, these bad things, these horrifically terrible things will happen.
It's hard for me to think that a guy like Merrick Garland and folks in those positions that they didn't know that, Jim. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
If they knew it, that's the point that makes it even worse. Come back with us, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, Merrick Garland. I think, yes, worst AG ever. 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy days to us all. You can be a part. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Our friend James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review, joining me at the table today. Jess P.S. on the board. You folks on the lines and on the text. It's the same number, 855-75-CIVIC. So I'm not a fan of Garland. I mean, it seems like a nice guy, but I don't know what the hell he was doing. I'm not going to say he was, you know, part of the conspiracy, quote unquote, but as mentioned, the lack of urgency, for Barr, they know when the statutes of limitations run out, they know the dates, they know the deal. These are professionals, prosecutors, judges, so on and so forth. They knew what was happening. I can't imagine this just crept up on them. Right. Oh, we ran out of time, man. Who knows? I mean, so if they were, in my mind, purposefully slow walking this thing,
right? Right.
Is that possible? Is that something, because you could have gone after it immediately, bang, 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 got ahead of it in front of the election, wouldn't have any of those kinds of issues. Right. It was very evident, at least on the television, what was going on. People were attacking it. Well, who motivated that? Who was behind that? Who made the calls? With the digital world we got now, you can find out everything.
Right. You could have called Jack Smith back from overseas doing his prosecution of war criminals early. You didn't necessarily have to make him special counsel. You'd simply hire him, put him in a position, which is another issue, which I think for a while we're going special counsel happy too.
Yeah.
Remember, we've got special counsels for Mike Pence. We've got special counsels for Joe Biden. And we're doing that, why? Because we want to send a message to America that the Department of Justice, which apparently can't do those investigations. What is that message that you're sending, Mr. Attorney General? Right? You're sending this message to somehow we've got to have somebody who's arm's length from us, who is not going to be supervised by me. And that, again, is because the American public really doesn't trust the Department of Justice. You're confirming that view when you do that very thing. Not only delaying it, but also sending that related message that the line prosecutors, there are thousands of them. They're spectacular. They know what the elements of the offenses are, of conspiracy and of the obstruction statutes, all those kinds of things.
This is what I'm saying. So if there's immense capability for those folks that are there, then these are career folks for the most part, man. They're down for law and order. That's why they get into
the deal.
They know
how
These aren't a bunch of drug dealing hippies, man. You know what I'm saying?
You
talk about justice and the FBI and these different agencies that the Republicans are all mad about. Well, if you stop your criming, maybe they wouldn't be poking their head around. But that aside, if you acknowledge that these are professionals and efficient and active prosecutors, then how do you explain the slow walking?
Right,
how do you explain the delay other than they didn't want to do it? They don't want to go after the executive branch. Right. They didn't want to, set a precedent, whatever their justification is. It doesn't matter because I don't buy it.
Because somehow you think, and again, I don't buy this either, but I think this is what's going on in Merrick Garland's mind early on. I want to turn the page on what Bill Barr did. I want to make clear that we are not animated by politics or partisan views. And therefore, again, not only am I going to point out these special counsels, but let's just see how this plays out. And I don't want to pounce right away upon the former president because that would look as if I'm retributive here.
You know what really looked bad was all those people attacking the Capitol and Trump saying, go down there and fight like hell. You're not going to country anymore. That looked kind of bad. I thought that was bad. I think that was something that would be bad.
And you have to, again, to the extent that this is all about restoring the reputation of the Department of Justice, you have to do it by saying, yes, this is what the Department of Justice is going to do. And yes, I will take the heat as the Attorney General for prosecuting Donald Trump as a private citizen. I will take the heat for the people inside the criminal division, the National Security Division, the civil division, all the ENRD, all tax, everybody. I will take the heat for what we do because the Department of Justice is uniquely positioned to do these kinds of things. I supervise the FBI, which is another important part of this as well. I have trust in them as well to do, not perfectly, to do their job well. You send that message by doing the job that you are supposed to do, not by cowering to the concern. Again, you talk about Timothy Snyder, right? Obeying in advance. Concern about how this is going to play out among the American population who looks at me and says, well, he's just another Bill Barr. No, you're not. If you're pursuing the investigations timely, you're doing them according to what the law requires, and you return indictments that are premised upon probable cause, that's what we expected you to do.
And the evidence, to go into an investigation or prosecution for political reasons is wrong, and to avoid them for political reasons is also wrong.
Right. And you do that, by a couple of ways. Number one is you present things to the grand jury. It's 26 people, right? And they're the ones who are supposed to be looking at all this. And then afterwards, you can issue your press releases. And you can even, as Jack Smith did so expertly throughout these cases, you can issue documents, your motions, your memorandums to the judges in which you set forth your case and you footnote them just like
Mueller did,
right? And you say, this is how we know these things, and you are justified in doing so.
James Santel, former U.S. Attorney. Jim, just another minute or so left in this segment, and we'll get into Judge Merchan at the top of the next hour. Is it lack of spine and lack of leadership? If it's not corruption and it's not incompetence, is it the lack of will or the lack of leadership? I mean, how would you describe it in the last 60 seconds?
I would say it's probably the second, leadership with a small L. This is a man, again, who he was in the Department of Justice a long time ago, so he knows that he's not this is not a complete new person to this, but it's a lack of appreciation of what the Department of Justice is all about, I think. And maybe his time on the bench clouded that a bit. Not that he didn't see prosecutors all the time, but internal to the Department of Justice, that sense of commitment, that's the important thing that I suspect he lacked.
We don't lack wisdom here. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, going to stick around for another hour. Folks, you can join us as well. 855-752-4842. As mentioned, Judge Merchan, he's going to sentence Donald Trump. It's going to be great. Oh, maybe not. Come back with us. It's a lie.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.